And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio, and it is Friday's 9 till noon show. And coming up in the next hour, we have our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you in a moment, but I just want to invite you to be involved in the conversation. If you want to WhatsApp or text, it's 086 60 25000. If you prefer to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. We'll introduce your comments throughout the course of the hour as they come in. Right, let's say good morning, because it's a blended situation, which is all very modern, isn't it? In studio, I have Nicholas Cross. And good morning, Nicholas. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
How are
good
you
morning,
keeping?
Oh, the very best,
you're looking,
thank God.
Very well. Time
thank
away
you.
From the council, doing you no harm. It's good to have you with us. We also have Lorraine Thompson, Regional Director of Donegal Youth Services. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
Feels like an age since I spoke to you last. Thank you so much for joining
us. It's been so long.
Of course. And last but not least, Emer McGuinness, Manager of Donegal Mod, and dare I say, social media influencer. I'm going to just chuck that in right now, Emer. I'm updating you.
You're very funny, Greg. Yes.
Hopefully you can scrape enough coins together for broadband. How long are you going to be doing this to me for, Emer?
What?
Your broadband, has it improved at all? Or maybe you have good broadband now, do you?
Now, do you know, last night we had no telly whatsoever here. It's all gone off. So I'm lucky I have anything at all.
All right, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. I'm not saying there's a lot of lag on the line, but the clock behind you says 5 to 9. But we'll listen, we will be okay. I'm joking.
That's wrong. You're reading it backwards. It's 10 past.
Okay. Right. Just reading in the front of the Irish Independent today, a borrowing surge by consumers for cars, home improvements and holidays has raised questions given the risk of a global downturn. Households have gone on a record-breaking borrowing spree with $2.5 billion taken out in personal loans last year. It's the highest personal loan activity since the bank started recording personal borrowing levels in 2020. As I mentioned, this is as it's generally anticipated that the economy will slow down globally. I'll start with you, Emer. Are we just living our best lives, or are we setting ourselves up for a fall again like we saw at the end of the 08, 09 and into the 10s?
Oh, look, we possibly are, yeah. But like everything can cost so much more now. You know, I spent last Sunday, we came back from holidays, and I spent the whole Sunday sitting in a meeting at Loan talking to the PSRA with regards to March and what they were going to do. Basically, they were saying that the March are the banks because farmers cannot get stock and loans from banks.
Right.
So it seems to be just a mess across the whole, you know. I don't know. Yes, I do think we are heading for everything has just doubled. So you see your shopping, you see anything you go to buy has doubled and tripled in price. Where will it end? God knows. But I don't know.
In relation to dairy, you know, milk, butter, meat, a lot of the price increases are being attributed to, you know, the increased cost of the source material, i.e. meat and milk. Is there a sense that's trickling down to farmers? I mean, some of the highest beef prices we've seen for quite some time are being given at the marts. Is it a good time for farmers?
It possibly is, but then that is a knock-on effect because the people that's buying the stock have to pay these prices for them. I always would have said, and I've been saying it to the factories for years, we have a lamb producer group, and you know, with regards to sheep and lamb prices, if they just give a good price to the farmer the whole year round, and that the farmer could aim to produce something within that price range, it would be a lot better than this thing of fluctuating really high and, you know, disappearing again. But yes, it's a good time for farmers, but the costs of going to vets, everything else has increased, your electricity, your water, everything. So they probably need that for all the losses they would have suffered over the last few years. Mm. So would I say that, you know, they've suddenly become rich? No, they're probably just making up for losses they would have previously had.
Yeah, but the only advantage is that they're actually just...
You're chatting about the butter and the dairy and everything else. That has been the organisations, the farm organisations, qualm for so long. It's not actually all going to the farmer. It goes to the retailers and... Mm. Everybody before the farmer. So, and that was always our price with the beef industry, or our problem with the beef industry. You know, the factories were getting it, the retailers were getting it, but it was not going back to the farmers.
All right, Nicholas Crossan, you know, I see the ratio of you know, the percentage you can borrow for a mortgage now, you know, it's edging back towards 100. I think there might actually be some 100% mortgages in the market. You know, people are borrowing extensively, 2.5 billion in personal loans last year, green loans in inverted commas for home improvements, presumably, but also, you know, buying cars, which is great for the car industry as well. I just wonder, are we walking ourselves, though, into another massive recession, or a recession of any sort, particularly as we don't know, you know, the impact necessarily of sanctions, for an example.
I'd agree what you're saying, Greg, on that. I would like to see if the borrowing was solely for houses and cars and various stuff, or was it coming out of savings? There's an awful lot of money coming out of the banks and savings as well, which would be good for the economy. But as Emer was saying, the price of everything has gone up. The price of houses has gone way through the roof. And the banks are willing to lend money again. And I thought it would take a little bit longer for the recovery to come round, and saying that people would be more cautious in their borrowing. But it seems to be that in a short few years from the early 2000s, right to know that the price of property has gone and people are willing to pay big money for houses and willing to borrow on it. I know that the industry at the moment in Ireland, the employment is, as they're saying, it running at 100% or very, very close to it, which is great for the economy and is great. But at the same time, I would be very cautious on over borrowing, and I wouldn't like to see the banks going to 100% again.
Yeah, what's your views on all of this, Lorraine Thompson?
I'm kind of shocked, to be honest. I didn't realise. Obviously, I'm just flicking through the article now that you have referred to there. I think for me, it comes down to people's appetite for risk, obviously, in households. The recession is probably quite fresh in a lot of people's minds. But at the same time, people have to live their lives. Coming out of a global pandemic, the global instability in the world at the minute, you know, people, I would imagine, are saying, you know, we have to get on with our lives. We only have one. We have to make the best of it. If we have access to money for holidays, obviously that's a luxury, but the need maybe to get away and to decompress for a few weeks is very important for families. In terms of buying new houses, you know, obviously young people want to get their lives in order. They want to get their foot on the ladder of the property market. So I guess I can't blame people for going to the banks and getting whatever they can. Mm-hmm. You know, we all did it at a young age. You know, we went and took whatever we could get.
Well, that's the problem, you see. That's exactly what I did in the mid-noughties, and I was banjaxed as a result of it. And a lot of these are personal loans as well, because I know we're all just reading through it because it was only published today. A lot of these are personal loans as well, in addition to mortgages. I mean, there's obviously a section of society that's spending big, because if you are, you know, if you're on a certain income, which the majority of people in this county are, you're probably not borrowing heavy. But I think there's a sort of a mid-law heading towards the rich that are obviously splashing the cash, Lorraine. And they're the same people that had the cash, I think, during the last recession, but held on to it and didn't spend it. So I think we're sort of, we rely on them quite an awful lot in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're a wee bit secluded up here in Donegal. We're in the middle of our DCB crisis. You know, you can understand, you know, people having to go in for additional loans for the rebuilds. So I suppose my head's kind of going there with that. But in terms of the rest of the country, you know, maybe they don't have those same pressure points. But obviously, property prices are on the huge increase. So yeah, I mean, part of me thinks fair play to them. I mean, they've obviously assessed the risk. You would imagine nobody goes in blindly taking out loans for whatever they need. You know, they have their repayments to consider, and they've obviously factored that into their budget.
Okay, I want to move on if that's okay. And something, well, all stories are local. The waiting list for a driving test in Ireland continues to grow across Donegal. End of November before you could even expect to get an invite to book a test if you applied in Inishowen today. The situation is not much better in Letterkenny, slightly better in Donegal Town. Can we realistically expect those figures to reduce? And is there a correlation with what appears to be a worsening level of driving behaviour? Nicholas, we have actually seen, you know, one of the biggest spikes in L drivers driving unaccompanied being caught in Donegal. As I say, you're from Inishowen. This is an ongoing problem. You don't even have your own driving tester. I believe one is shared from the Letterkenny office. But it's crazy to think you apply for your test today and realistically you won't be sitting it until January 2026 if you're lucky.
Yeah. I just was saying, Greg, about this time 7 years ago, I raised this point with Donegal County Council, and the waiting time in Buncrana that time was 26 weeks. Letterkenny was 12 and Donegal Town was 14 weeks. But the rest of the country was going okay, so it wasn't really a national issue, and that's what I was sorry about. I'm actually glad, in one sense, that it is now raised as a national issue, because I do believe that there has to be work done. I got Senator Victor Boyan to raise this back with the RSA, and we got the time actually come down in Buncrana to 12 weeks, and it was floating along for 12 weeks, and then I think the pandemic came in and it went askew after that. But for the government, and far be it for me to defend the government, but for the government to say, turn around and say, look, this, they know the population of Ireland, they know the percentage of people coming up at 17 and 18 that is going to be applying for driving licence, so they have a fair estimate how many people each year is going to apply for the licence. We haven't enough driving testers in place for that there. The minister has assured us that he's going to look at it now, which is probably but 10 years too late.
And that's Jack Chambers that said that. Yeah. And we've heard that year on year on year, and we've heard it the same with the NCTs. It could be like the guards, though. Just because they employ another 80 driving instructors, it doesn't mean that two are going to get sent to Inishowen. That's the problem. That's the national answer to the question. Can we have any faith there'll be a local solution?
But there are solutions, and I do believe that, look, there's driving instructors who would be qualified. I mean, like, this could be as a temporary basis, take somebody on for 6 months or a year. Why can we not do tests on Saturday and Sunday? If somebody wants to do it, especially for rural Ireland and Donegal, I mean, like, you know yourself, Greg, we have poor bus service around here. We have no trains. Our public transport is poor in respect of a lot of the rest of the country. And I do believe that the young people in Donegal area and throughout the whole of the rural Ireland deserve to get their driving test within it. The way that I explained it, if you applied on the 1st of January to do your test, you drove on the 1st of June at your test. If you failed it, it was Christmas before you got a retest. A year waiting on test in this day and age is laughable, you know, and we have to just improve on it.
Eimear McGuinness, you know, if someone close to you was looking to sit their driving test in Donegal Town, you know, you're sitting there going, am I going to get the contact this week? Am I going to get the contact? There was no driving tests in Donegal Town last week and none this week. Well, there was two days of driving tests with a trailer, right, which is not for the majority. So you're sitting there thinking, is it going to be my turn soon? And for a fortnight, not a single test was taken in Donegal Town. It's very frustrating for people who are waiting. And I think we've all been in that boat, either directly or with a direct 1 degree of separation. What do you think?
Well, I was listening to Deanne's interview with you and I was absolutely shocked. I can't get over it in this day and age that I would have assumed that we had a driving test or test, whatever you want to call them, in every area in Donegal. And I assumed that there was driving tests going on every day. So, yeah, it is laughable. And that's the only word you could use to describe it. And there really is no excuse why there isn't, only the government, they're just trying to, they're not spending the money in that area and they have to be held to account. And we should be up in arms. I was also looking at Galway. Galway is a lot higher. Theirs is a lot longer than Donegal's. So, you know, I don't know. Why is nobody saying anything?
I think the government's somewhat insulated in that they can blame the RSA, and that's a little problem that we have in this country, in that they can say, well, oh, we need to look at the RSA, we'll split it into two, one looking after the quality of vehicles, one looking after road education or what have you. You know, there's that sort of degree of separation between the Transport Minister, I think, and this problem, which doesn't help.
But you see, it's not just, and that's what I don't understand, why there hasn't been a hoo-ha about it long before now. You know, Nicola said they spoke about it 7 years ago. The waiting times have grown and grown and grown in every county. You know, why are they not employing these people? And it's down to money again. They just haven't spent the money in employing them. As, you know, Nicholas also said, there's loads of driving instructors there that would be more than qualified to do them. They've just literally sat in their asses and done nothing about it, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, and a lot, I mean, I think reason why there isn't a hoo-ha, it's a little bit like the health crisis. People don't really care as much as perhaps they should unless they're actually sick or well, in that situation.
Unless you know about it.
Exactly, and there's no union of people waiting on a driving test. So there's no organisation. It's thousands and thousands of people individually frustrated, Emer, and I think that's part of the issue. Lorraine Thompson, I find it very frustrating, and I find it really, you know, for young people, I hope we're not losing people to Australia and Canada and Dubai because they're not prepared to sit around for a year asking mum or dad for a lift and they feel that they can get on with their lives elsewhere. I'd hate if that was a result of all of this.
Possibly is. Greg, speaking as a mum who has a son away, he had his test, though, before he went. So it meant that whenever he went out there, he was able to get the jobs driving in the mine sites, which is very important. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We are losing our young people to Australia and other countries. I don't know if that's directly related to them not having their licences, because there does seem to be a drive, excuse the pun, for those young people to get their licences before they go. Anecdotally, you know, we are hearing stories of people, you know, trying to go to other test centres, you know, trying to get on the list any way they can. I think it's hugely problematic for young people who are, you know, trying to get jobs. I seem to have a memory back in the day that you could have put forward a reason why you needed your test date sooner, which is, you know, that you needed it for a job. I don't think that works anymore.
No, it's done away now. It's done away. Yeah, they can't do that anymore, Lorraine.
Yeah, and as Nicholas has said, you know, we're a rural county. We don't have the public transport infrastructure to facilitate people in their jobs. It doesn't surprise me what you said about learner drivers being caught unaccompanied, because what else are people to do? And I know it's against the law and it's against insurance, but you know, if you want to get on with your life and, you know, earn an income, and you need a transport mode for that, I think it's really good that this is under the spotlight. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, the wait lists. When I was reading articles on it earlier, we are nearly up to post-pandemic wait periods. It seems a very simplistic answer to say we need more instructors. Why do we not have them? Why is there no thinking outside the box? It's certainly not cheap to get your lessons, to get your test. You would imagine that the resources are there. There's more than 83,000 people on the wait list at the minute.
Yeah, and you know, if you factor in the challenge you might face getting on the road if you're a young person, if you factor in the fact that, you know, if you want to move out from under mum and dad's roof, the rents are the price of a mortgage, and also the fact that it's for many people, getting a mortgage now seems unattainable. And because of planning, even if your dad or your mom gave you a plot of land, or your granddad, you can't build on it if you're on the N56, for an example. You know, maybe it's becoming a no country for young men and women, and that's part of the reason why we're seeing such a drive out of the country, which is very problematic, especially as this population ages. You know, we can't be losing young people at this rate. It's very concerning, Nicholas.
Greg, I would just like to say on that point, there's over 80,000 people waiting. That's a revenue of 5 million. This is cost neutral to the government. It's actually a money making for them, because the people that will be getting going for their driving test has to go for lessons, and that's be paid to driving instructors. So it's a cost neutral effect, and I just get the driving instructors in place and get on with the job. It's ludicrous, really.
Yeah, can you imagine if we had a Minister for Transport that said that?
Well,
that is literally the solution.
Transport in this country.
So what's the solution? Let's employ more driving testers and just get on with it.
On a temporary basis. But there's plenty of people out there. It would be a great job if you had nerves to sit on. Or
Eimear, do you get a sense, because also in that conversation with Diane yesterday, she says that... She's recognised a major increase in dangerous driving. Are you seeing that? I'm seeing undertaking, and I'm seeing more instances of crazy stuff now than I ever did. People may be always sped, or whether they should or not, but like real crazy driving. I don't know what your experience is.
And you know, like, I'd be on the road. My husband would be given out. I got a new car, and the mileage up on it already is scandalous. So I do be on the road a lot, and it is crazy. I was listening to her, and we were laughing when we were listening, but it's not funny.
No, I know what you mean, though. It's a natural reaction.
You know, we were driving down the road there when even my husband was trying to take off after somebody. It was that what he'd done was that crazy an act. You know, he wanted to get his bread. But, you know, and I don't understand it, because now more than ever, when you are going for your driving lessons, you have to do so much more. It takes so much longer to get your license. So you're doing a lot more driving than you would have been. And then you see all the accidents, and horrific accidents at that. And you have to wonder, you know, what's wrong with people? But we all seem to be, and you know, I sometimes wonder, is it because we're all rushing? Lives have got so busy, and people are angry. So yes, I do. I think there's an element of that, that you don't have any patience, that you're in a hurry.
We've all seen that person overtake us like a madman or woman.
Yeah.
And then we pull up behind them at the same junction fighting.
That's right, at the same time, yeah.
So surely they're realising that what they're doing is not working. It's of no benefit. Yeah. Nicholas, what are you seeing on the roads? Do you see worse instances?
Yes.
Because the more of that there is, we're rolling the dice, right? Because the greater the risk of a serious road traffic collision there
is. Yeah, Greg, very, very simple thing. I took my car down for the NCT on Tuesday this week.
Did it pass?
Failed major fault.
Really? Okay.
The major fault was two bulbs were fused over the number plate in the back.
Okay.
So I got those two bulbs fixed now and went back down. It was a visual inspection that was inspected and it passed, yeah. So what I'm saying is, I'm lying in my bed at night, and there's a guy driving around Buncrana with an exhaust either hanging off or no exhaust in the car. Their suspensions are cut down on them, the modified, and they're not safe, these cars, on the road. But yet, I had to go and get, it was my own fault, I had to get two bulbs to put into the car to get an NCT.
They literally do say to make sure to check your lights.
Yes, I know that, but I checked every light except the daylights.
Yeah, but you see, this is the thing, because what frustrates me is I was going to take a car to an NCT, and it was out of, the tax had just expired, and I cancelled the NCT and had to reschedule it. And the reason I was driving it through that third party cover thing. It wasn't insured, right? Yeah. It was NCT and taxed, so I could drive it, but it wasn't taxed, so I didn't want to risk that. And at the same weekend, you've got these idiots doing donuts up around the roundabouts in Inishowen and elsewhere, right? And I'm so blooming cautious that it's cost me about 80 quid. But there's definitely a sense from some that you can drive however you like in Donegal or in this area and not get caught.
Well, there seems to be, certainly in my opinion, if somebody is driving like that, there, nobody sets out to have an accident. There's no doubt about that. Nobody sets out to have an accident. But if there's an accident, and God forbid somebody's killed or something like that, or the driver kills somebody, and they're saying, I didn't mean to do it. No, nobody meant to do it, but we must. And the word that has gone out of our vocabulary is responsibility. Mm. We must take responsibility for our own actions. Anybody caught driving, dangerous driving, should have... There's only one way to put them. Put them, get points or money, or put them off the road.
I mean, I have to say, we did have a case this week where a person who should have known better was driving four young kids to a Debs, 150 miles per hour in an 80 kilometre zone. At least two of the kids screaming for him to slow down. Two beautiful young women, their lives taken away from them. 7 years. Dangerous driving causing death. 7 years.
It wouldn't matter if it's 70 or 70 years for the families that's left behind.
Well, the families would have got great comfort with a greater sentence, but look at the message it sends out versus, you know.
And somebody, as you say, somebody should at that age should have had a bit of sense.
Lorraine Thompson, what's your observations out and about on the road and I suppose the conversation more generally?
Well, I live obviously very close to the Polestar roundabout. Blows my mind every day when I navigate that roundabout, how people approach it, how people get through it, how people move from one lane to another, wondering is it the drivers or is it actually the layout. I do think obviously as a rural county with the you know, such a kind of vast amount of roads that are very windy and narrow. It's always amazing to me when you meet people coming on the wrong side of the road at you. I was coming out of Burtonport earlier this week and I was in a Porsche sandwich. There was a couple behind me and a couple in front of me and the engines were revving to get past me. I mean, I'm quite a nippy driver myself, I thought. I just needed to get out of the way. I think they were all English Regs. They must have been on a Porsche day out, but they overtook me in a very unsafe part of the road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a bit shook afterwards thinking, because I was just about to slow down to turn left, to turn off to the Letterkenny Road. And if I had, slowed down at that point, he would have been into the back of me. That being said, I do think, I mean, we have a history in Donegal of multiple car fatalities here. We do have a lot of, as Nicholas has said, younger drivers involved. And so we are very mindful as a county of that. Obviously, we have the border and the impact of drivers coming in from a different jurisdiction. And maybe not as aware of our legal requirements here because maybe they feel that they're not going to get the brunt of that. So all of those things, I think, add to the dangerous driving that we see on the road. Plus, obviously, road rage, people in a rush, people trying to get past you. I mean, I've been that person myself. You're trying to get from A to B and there's maybe slower drivers on the road. But it all comes down to enforcement and risk, as I said earlier in the last statement about money. It's your appetite for risk.
Yeah, well, I saw a near miss this week. Lorraine, by the sounds of it, you saw a near miss. Eimear, you and your hubby saw a near miss. I don't know about you, Nicholas. Yeah. So, I mean, that's four of us. Just random, this randomly for conversation. Yeah. We've all seen a situation whereby it was more luck than anything else that something serious didn't happen. Okay, interesting stuff. I'm going to take a break, but just a couple of comments to take me a little closer to it. A listener says, the driving test wait times in the RSA are an absolute joke. People rarely pass the test first time these days. It's 50. It's around 50%, actually. It depends. It can be 48, between 48 and 60% pass rate, but on average, really half of people are failing. 10 to 12 weeks to rebook your test. You then had a choice of 3 to 5 weeks for a date from when you booked. Can you ask Mr. Crossan if the unwanted Buncrana sign will be removed soon and Buncrana gets back its Shore Green as a signed petition was given to him ages ago? That a bit of a current?
No, the most
Why is, where's the controversy there?
There's about four people in Buncrana keeping it going. It's the most photographed thing in Buncrana. It's two summer seasons, Greg, and it's not going to be moved.
Like, I'm not from the area, so I'm not taking sides, but it looks like a lovely photo.
I was around the beach last night and the sun was setting over Fannet, which the place we're strategically placed there. There's photographs. I've yet to walk past or somebody hasn't been taking a photograph. Okay. I think it's the greatest. There's one in every town in the world, for God's sake.
There's a small group of people that are... Yes. Okay. I sat my test in 2008. Were you waiting on that one?
No.
Okay.
It had died away, actually, but there's
two. All right, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I sat my test in 2008 in a temporary test centre that was based in the NCT Centre in Letterkenny, so they were able to do it then on a temporary basis, so why not now? Okay, I want to come back to that, actually, in a sec. It's a separate issue. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're in and enjoying the company of our three guests, Nicholas, Eimear and Lorraine. More from them after we take a break. The technology is there, says the listener. I cannot understand why it's not used. Young people have a full sense of security in the car. They seem to think they are cushioned by being in that car. And a caller says, literally in the last minute, a van driver has come right through a stop sign and nearly took me out of it as I was turning right. And unfortunately, these things are happening all the time. I own two modified cars that pass the NCT, so not all modified cars are dangerous. But I think it's presumed that you know exactly the cars that Nicholas is talking about, those that are no longer safe because they aren't being driven to the manufacturer's specifications. It doesn't mean you can't modify a car, but if you take the springs off and hacksaw them in your own garage and bang them on, you don't know how that car's going to perform when you've got five people in it with you. Let me see, what should we go to next? The government wants to explore banning. We've done this quite a bit in the past, but we'll be brief enough on this. The government wants to explore banning those under 16 from social media sites. The opposition think it's kite flying and don't think it's realistic. Lorraine, do you have a view on whether or not there should be restrictions on under 16s accessing social media? Do you believe adults, though, would be prepared to offer up their IDs, which would probably be required to enable it to happen? How much do we care about young people?
Okay, so first of all, to say this is the book that a lot of it is based on. Just got a copy of it. Haven't read it yet. I've scanned through it to see where is this coming from. So the book is The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. So obviously that's a backdrop. We have Australia, who introduced this ban in late 2024. I believe they're still grappling with how that's going to play out. But obviously then other countries like Ireland and England and other countries around the world are looking at this with great interest. There is no doubt that there's a link between social media and mental health. And we're seeing increased anxiety levels, increased depression levels in young people. We have the data age of consent at 16. So that's the backdrop to all of this, which I think is very important to say, why would we need to do this? We have our social media sites, TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, all with a consent age of 13. So there's a disparity between the digital age of consent at 16 and these sites allowing young people on at 13. That being said, how would we ever get there? So first of all, we need the willingness. Government are proposing it. I can imagine all the parents who would be against it, the parents would be in favour of it. School communities, where does that sit? Because obviously we're all players and this is stakeholders.
Who would be against it though, on the basis that they believe 13-year-olds should be on some of these sites? Like, I think a lot of parents, I would welcome it, the ban, because I could go to my child and say, well, I'm sorry, it's not my fault, it's banned. You know what I mean? Like,
and as a parent, I think it's really useful to have somebody else kind of coming over the shoulder to say, this is not me, this is the enforcement of blah, blah, blah. But we also know that parents want to keep their children happy, keep their teenagers happy and give them what they want. So, yes, you asked the question, do you think parents would give kids kind of a fake ID?
I misframed that. That possibly could happen. But the only way this could be enforced is if everyone gave their ID. Sorry, Lorraine, I should have made that clear. And I think there's lots of people, even though they might say we need to keep our kids safe online, don't want to give social media they prefer to say anonymous on social media, for an example, or they don't believe that social media companies should have that information, and that is fine, but that is the price that would have to be paid to ensure that we were able to enforce a ban. Sorry, Lorraine, I didn't phrase that too good on the introduction, and I'm sure some would provide fake IDs, don't get me wrong.
I would imagine some would try to circumvent whatever rules are there, and I think that will happen. There is lots of new technologies, I believe, coming on stream, so that there are like facial recognition ways of assessing the age of a person using these sites. So it may actually not involve parents giving consent. So, I mean, kind of technology is moving that quick. It's sometimes hard to keep up. It's kind of mind-blowing how quickly it moves on. And obviously it would take a certain age of a smartphone or a device to assess that. So there's all of that. But I do think that it's really interesting, just on my last point, there was a report came out this week from the UNICEF, from the UN, and it states that Irish teenagers are the least happy in the developed world. I think that's really interesting in this whole conversation.
And what has changed, you know, what's the most significant factor that's changed? It's the fact that much of their lives is lived in this digital space. I'll make the argument again. There's no way you would drop your 13-year-old off into the middle of a major shopping centre somewhere and tell them, just go ahead and take picture, give pictures of yourself to other people and chat to whomever you like. You simply wouldn't do it. Yet that's precisely what's happening in the digital space. But it's very difficult for parents to regulate that. I know myself. Emer, do you think we should really start looking properly at banning under 16s from these social media sites? Some of them have you know, extreme pornography on them, the likes of X, for an example. Or do you think we need to approach this from a different angle, as it's unforceable and a bit of kite flying?
It's a difficult one. And I think it's sad in one instance that when we grew up, you know, the mobile phones, and well, I know when I was growing up, they were only coming in when I was a teenager, you know, and to think now that we can't literally survive or have maybe a 10-minute conversation without checking our phone is sad. And it's sad to think that young ones just don't know how to survive without them. There's a good side to social media as well, and online and advertising and companies and everything else. But there's a wild pressure on parents, and I feel for parents because the children, you don't want their children excluded to be the only one left out if everyone else is on these, because then they're bullied for that reason. But my big thing would be, and we've seen it in Cavan, and I watched that again recently, that case, you know, of the child that committed suicide because they were bullied. That, to me, is the worst side of social media, and there's really nothing that can actually follow up on that and fix it. And
yeah, I wonder what the positives are of social media for under 16s in reality.
For that age.
Yeah, I mean, for us, fantastic stuff to get messages out there, you know, empower people, advertise, network. But really, for under 16s, where is the positive space online?
Because
even if it's about staying in contact with your friends, it's all image based. And even with that, in and of itself, comes a great deal of pressure. Sorry, Lorraine, you were going to say.
I think there are positives, Emer, because I think, like, when I see the way I use social media, when you go searching for remedies, recipes,
etc.
No.
Young people
16,
also do that.
16 and under, yeah.
No, they also do that.
Yeah, but I can, but like
my daughter here, and she said she learns more from TikTok than she does from school. She'll kill me for saying that on the radio, but she's just turned 17. Yes, TikTok, and I'm not really on it, has a massive information. Obviously, you have fake news. Obviously, you have to navigate it, you know, and I think young people are kind of better at doing that because they've obviously grown up with it. And I'm not taking away, Emer, all the negative stuff. It's, of course, it's all there, but it's like, how do you balance it?
Well, the problem with TikTok, if you watch one 15-second video, when you watch it in its entirety on TikTok about young people's mental health, from there, instantly, that algorithm will start bombarding that child with amateur mental health advice, some of it actually really that's designed to corrupt the child. And that's a real issue, because it will target anything that you show any interest in at all, which is fantastic if it is maths and other things. I haven't brought Nicholas in on this one yet. Nicholas, what say you?
Very interesting points from what Lorraine made earlier on. But it's good to be able to talk about this, but we are serious that we have a problem here. It's the next, it's not even the next addiction. It is an addiction at the present moment in time, the mobile phone. The social media is, I don't even know a quarter of the, what are the ones that's out there. But we have a disconnected, or teenager now are disconnected. They're unable to talk to one another unless it's through phone. And I think this is a backward step for ourselves. The government can make laws. And if they're going to do it, if Australia's doing it, it's going to take a long, long time to tweet it. While we're going to give up our ID to say that this here, there has to be another way around that, because I don't think people's going to give up their privacy.
But you see, therein, this
yeah,
is...
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's other ways of doing it.
Well, I'll give up my anything that I have if it means protecting young people from
But why does a young person not give up their ID to say
on? Yes, but the only way that works, you see, is if you're not going to give up your ID to say, I'm too young to go on it, right? It's a process of elimination. You eliminate all of those that are of age to go on, and then you're left with those that are underage. So it's the adults have to give their identification to silo the young people.
I possibly say, you know, it's always good to do something, but as it's too little, too late, because social media is huge influence on our children, as we know. That's just what they see.
But it's the Wild West. There's no regulation.
Not only on our young children. I had to laugh at the Halloween party in Dublin, when thousands of people come out in O'Connell Street because somebody put it up on social media that there was a Halloween party, and it wasn't. There was no party. There was no parade. And people turned out because somebody put it up. It must be true. It's on Facebook. Right. Fake news. I don't know.
Listen, I'm going to take a break. We'll be back in 3.5 minutes. Stay where you are. We're in the midst of amazing spell of weather, and we live in the most beautiful county in Ireland. I'm not sure anyone on this call is going to disagree with that. So, Emer, if you had to recommend a place, an experience or an activity to a visitor or even someone who's doing something within the county, what would it be? No pressure.
God, does it have to be our direction?
That's we don't mind parochialism. It's perfectly fine.
Well, I'd be telling them to come down, start off in Slieve League, Silver Strand Beach, and work your way back out, or even go the way around by Ardra to Mahara. We did actually a trip there one Sunday. We tried to do something every so often. We headed off, and it was the most. We went down to Mahara and on round by that way, and we came out by Glen Columkill. It was absolutely fabulous, and it was the first time I'd actually taken that trip. And then you come as far as Killybegs. You have the waterfall. You have the most fabulous restaurants, places, things to do. But again, we probably need the good weather to enjoy them. All of Donegal, as you said, is absolutely fabulous. And a group of my friends, we do always try to do a few trips every summer, and we go to different areas. But we did often say that when we headed off to all the other places, we live in the most beautiful place ourselves.
Mm. And you can have such different cultural experiences within the one county too, which I find remarkable. I can't imagine Nicholas Crossan's going to step one inch outside in his own, or perhaps you're going to surprise us, Nicholas.
Well, I was going to go do a guided tour of Donegal, but if you're asking for one spot, it has to be the biggest peninsula in Ireland.
Yeah.
Starting off at Green and Ophalia, down all the way through Inch into Buncrana, Dunree, over Mamore to the Magic Road in Mamore. And unfortunately, but hopefully very soon, the Isle of Doe will be opened again. Mm-hmm. Pat done a great job down there, and it was a terrible tragedy what happened for him. Into the heart of Inishowen and Cairn and Mallon. Out to Mallon Head, Five Finger Strand, Knockamany Bend, the scenery from there. And to the very top of Ireland, to Mallon Head. Turning around there and coming back into the...
Yeah, but stay and spend a few quid in Mallon. That's the problem. People just turn around and leave. Stay and spend a few quid.
Oh, there's no problem. I'm a great believer in getting a pound out of the pocket. But come back down through Kildaff to the Blue Fag and Carramina there, where Thomas D'Arcy McGee left to go to write the Constitution of Canada. I had Canadians down there this day fortnight. I was just doing that route. Over into Kennego Bay, down into Maritime and Greencastle, down the Foyle, and end up in Wild Ireland, the biggest peninsula in Ireland, Inishowen. While the rest of the county is beautiful, there's no two ways about it, but the top of Ireland, right here in Inishowen.
Okay. Lorraine Thompson, what say you? I feel like I'm going to get a more nuanced answer from you. I don't know why. I just feel
more balanced.
Yeah.
So I was at my book club last night with Rush Fitness, bit of a plug there, and we had about 10 women in our group. And to kick us off, I asked them this question and I got 10 different answers, and everybody was really passionate about their reasons. But one of the members there has set up a new website, and I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called whatsonletterkenny.ie. And I thought it was a very good answer that they would go there and they would say what was happening in Donegal on the day in question. So I thought that was great. And it obviously has, it's a fabulous website, but it's very up to date in terms of events and activities. That being said, this week I had the pleasure of visiting Arnmore for work, and in this weather, you know, it actually felt like I was abroad. It was absolutely amazing. I visited the school there. I was super jealous of their view of the beach, the ferry in and out. It was just absolutely amazing. I also was fortunate enough to make my way to Dunfanaghy on, I think, Wednesday night. My daughter was pier jumping, had an ice cream, a little walk around the town, and one of the bars had all their chairs and tables outside, and there was a live musician who actually at one stage on his guitar was on top of the table playing Purple Rain. It was phenomenal.
What an experience. That's got everything. It's got live music, sitting outside and being able to nose on everyone. Now, I'm not talking about you, me. Just sit outside and have a nosy at everyone, driving past, walking past. Fantastic. Well, listen, that's unbelievable. We'll ask our listeners. And you got two plugs in. What's on Letterkenny and Rush Fitness. Well done.
And the book club.
And the book club. Yeah, exactly. All right. Brilliant stuff. How's did they close Main Street Killybegseymer in the end, or did they come up with some sort of a compromise?
Well, you know, I didn't even walk through the main street, but I do. Yeah, they seem to be out working, but I don't know. I can't answer you that, Greg.
That's all right. It's okay. Listen,
I've been away. I've been in the office trying to catch up at work after holidays, and
we're also blooming busy, aren't we? It's crazy stuff. Listen, Eimear, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy your weekend. Try and make a bit of time for yourself. Thank you for your time as always.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Lovely to have you on the show again, Lorraine. Chat to you soon. Thanks, everyone. Greg. Take care of yourself. And last but not least, Nicholas, thank you so much for calling in to us. It's been good to see you again, and you're looking fantastic as well.
Thanks, Greg. I enjoyed the quick hour.
It does not belong going
No,
in,
that's
does
great.
It?
That's great.
Right, okay, so I'm going to throw this out to the great public. What do you think is the greatest singular experience that you would recommend to someone in Donegal, particularly during this good weather? Obviously, we heard from Nicholas, the entire peninsula, Eimear, all of southwest Donegal, and Lorraine picked her faves out as well. But what is the one experience that you would recommend to someone visiting Donegal or the place to go? Let us know. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. It's the 9 till noon show, you know.